have a group of friends who I get together with every year for an annual girls' weekend. The weekend is full of stories, laughter, tears, just general love and support for each other. And we have a few traditions during this weekend. We tend to like to walk along the ocean, dip our toes in the Pacific. We stay up way too late, and the first one up always has to make the coffee. We often each bring small gifts for the others, usually something from our hometown or perhaps a memento from somewhere we have traveled. And we have our tablecloth tradition. So many years ago, we started the tablecloth tradition. You see, we were in a different chapter of our lives, with most of us having young children at that time. And we began to pick our dinner restaurants by if the restaurants had tablecloths. And when I say tablecloths, I mean cloth, ironed, crispy, edged, cornered tablecloths. We would walk by restaurants in town and look in the windows, and if there were no tablecloth, we kept walking. You see, we wanted a meal in a place that we wouldn't normally eat with young children. Not that you can't take young kids to restaurants with tablecloths, but the added anxiety of wondering whether they would get tangled up in the tablecloth or when they would begin to pull the corner of the tablecloth usually meant the meal was eaten as quickly as possible. So our tablecloth test had more to do with the way to set aside this meal, this time that we were together, and making something special. Not the everyday, but something to be savored, something to be enjoyed. And that is what Sabbath means to me. Sabbath is often a word that we immediately connect with the Ten Commandments that we read from Deuteronomy today. It's depicted as the fourth commandment from the tablets that Moses brought down from Mount Sinai. It is described as the day of rest for everyone in the household, including even the animals. It connects back with the story of creation when God was said to have rested on the seventh day. And our gospel reading today tells of Jesus' activities on the Sabbath. Somehow in these stories, we're often told of breaking the Sabbath and Jesus and the disciples' actions, and it never fails that the Pharisees always seem to be the ones there. They seem to be the ones shaking their fingers at Jesus, scolding him for breaking the rules around rest and Sabbath. It's often very easy to paint them as the villains in each of these stories that we hear. But the Pharisees were trained lay people in Jewish law, and they carried both the law from Moses as well as a belief in oral stories. And as much as we hear about them in the New Testament stories, they actually had no power to arrest Jesus, and certainly not to order his death. That wasn't their role in the Jewish hierarchy. So rather than looking at these stories in our gospel today as Jesus versus the Pharisees, let's see perhaps what else might be at play. There are essentially two parts to our gospel today: the plucking of the heads of grain in the grain field and the healing of a man with a withered hand. Now, the author of the Gospel of Mark doesn't tell us why the disciples are plucking the grain. We're not told that they've been traveling for several days without food or that they're in need of nourishment. But Jesus references a story about King David feeding his soldiers with the holy and sacred bread from the temple. The story then becomes more about a petty exchange that creates this juxtaposition between Jesus as the new Messiah and the old understandings of the law. But the author of Mark pulls this example of David, and it's not actually truly accurate. In the story that he is trying to retell, David and his soldiers were not hungry, and they did not get the bread from the temple. And really, to add the emphasis to this, Pharisees would not have been out in a grain field witnessing what Jesus and his disciples were doing in the first place. The story of the healing of the withered hand pushes us with more questions. Jesus seems to be questioning why life and death issues are prohibited on the Sabbath. But the man is not dying from his withered hand. He's actually had this condition for a long time. And thus the questions remain. So what might be taken away from these strange stories about Sabbath and law and actions and consequences? I would propose that we think about how we might experience this Sabbath that Jesus talks of. Jesus tells us that the Sabbath was made for humankind and not humankind for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was created for us, a gift from God, and not just a gift, but one that we need as humans. We do not have to earn it, but rather God gives it to us freely, just as God's grace is freely given as well. So what can we do with this gift? You see, it's often a hard gift for people to receive. It flies in the face of so many values that our society holds. Hardworking, successful, accomplished, these are all virtues that are held up. And people often believe that they're only achieved after long workdays, overtime hours, and working weekends. This is what our society tells us over and over and over again. Somehow we're supposed to earn our Sabbath. There seems to be rules around rest, what we can and can't do. Have we worked hard enough to earn the rest? Have we billed enough hours, accrued enough vacation time, crossed off enough things on that to-do list? Somehow we learn that we can only rest after we've been working hard at something, and then, and only then, it's okay to sit and catch our breath. Thus, we just keep working harder and longer to accomplish some kind of goal just out of our reach, some level of success that has been set before us. When people ask how we are, we reply, busy. But let me offer another analogy in addition to my tablecloth one. I used to have a really hard time on airplanes as we were getting ready to take off and they were giving you your safety instructions. And the part that was so difficult for me was about the oxygen mask. You see, often I was traveling with my children. And the idea that I would put on an oxygen mask before my kids had their oxygen masks on just made me cringe. I used to just get all irritated, to be honest with you, and think to myself, that is not what I would do in the case of an emergency. It wasn't until a friend pointed out to me one time, Whitney, if you are passed out on the ground due to lack of oxygen, are you going to be able to help anyone around you? It gave me something to think about. That, I think, is why we have a Sabbath. We are called as children of God to help those around us with their oxygen masks. But we cannot do this work if we are not receiving oxygen as well. So today, I strongly suggest to you, you need to observe a Sabbath. What might it look like? Well, I imagine it can take many forms, depending on where you find respite and where you find delight. Perhaps it's in nature with walks, or with meals with loved ones, with your pets, or hobbies, or just sleep. Maybe it's found when you turn off your screens, your phones, your constant worrying thoughts. Maybe you find it in the activities that bring you joy, the special moments of creative energy or connection with loved ones. Maybe you find it in deep, uninterrupted afternoon naps. Wherever you find Sabbath, I invite you to return there regularly, scheduled, frequently, and with no guilt. As is mentioned in the gospel reading today, Jesus was grieved at their hardness of heart. I believe this hardness can occur when we're stressed out, when we're burnt out, when we feel like we're running on fumes. Jesus wants us to show up as our best persons, as our whole and healed selves, as the person that delights in the world that God has created, as the one who enjoys the meal with the tablecloths. And in order to do this, we need to have an oxygen mask. We need to have Sabbath.